Metro, higher accumulations in the gorge. Coming up next at 9 o'clock, it's Press Watch. Teresa Mitchell is going to discuss the general strike that is being called for January 20th. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. At 10:15, it's the Bradcast with Brad Friedman. Recount 2016 coverage continues with denial in Philadelphia and unrecountable in Michigan. Also, he'll discuss Trump nomination of a climate change denier to lead the EPA. At 11 o'clock on Between the Covers, author Emma Donahue will discuss her critically acclaimed new book, The Wonder. And at 11:30, Words and Pictures brings you the work of Portland-based artist Anders Nielsen and his sketchbook collection, Poetry is Useless. Thank you, KBO members, for your generous support. A reminder that new and increased gifts to KBOO are matched 1-to-1 through the end of the year, thanks to the Collins Foundation and SSI Shredding Systems. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. It's 9 o'clock.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Radical Chorus Workshop and Skillshare on December 11th at 3 p.m. at Revolution Hall in Portland. Led by Mo Baustern, founding member of the Amalgamated Everlasting Union Chorus Local 824, the Radical Chorus Workshop and Skillshare will define what a radical chorus is, discuss affinity groups, protests, and the effectiveness of fabulous outfits, and teach protest songs by Chumbawamba, The Frogs, Loretta Lynn, and more. Again, that's the Radical Chorus Workshop and Skillshare on December 11th at 3 p.m. at Revolution Hall, 1300 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Joining me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Well, I want to do some news headlines and I want to give you the latest on the recount. After that, I want to talk about the general strike that's going to happen on January 20th, Inauguration Day, for President Trump. And I think that we can turn that day around into something that is very empowering and that will launch many, many efforts. But more on that in a minute. And I changed the order of things, my little agenda here, because the wind is blowing at 30 miles an hour and it's very close to freezing. And what that means is that you out there who are living rough, who maybe only have enough gas in your car or your truck to keep you warm for part of the night, are really going to suffer from this. And we're talking about exposure. It is so severe when the wind blows this hard and so unrelentingly, like it did last night and it does today, that those of you who are living rough have really had the starch taken out of you right now. And I just want to go around the euphemisms right now and say that some of you are at risk of death. You won't die today, but you might die Monday. And you might die Sunday. I don't know. Very serious about this, because that's how exposure works. It just takes everything out of you, and then you don't get relief, and you don't get relief, and then you suddenly decide that you feel very, very tired, and you're gone. So we need to address that first, since we do live in the post-Reagan economic horror, and many of us are on the streets. Some of you listening on your car radios, some of you have a little battery-powered radio and are hearing my voice right now. I want to give you some of the shelters. Those of you who are waiting for more nationally oriented news, if you'll just bear with for a moment. By the way, I've got three people in my house right now who aren't able to pay rent at the moment, and I challenge each and every one of you, if you know somebody or if you think you can make friends with somebody and warm them up for a while, maybe overnight, maybe you think about that today in this greater Cascadia. There is a list of shelters on the PortlandMercury.com. Bless them for doing this right. Certainly can't say that the local TV stations did much good in this regard, but Dirk Vanderhart of the Portland Mercury has a list, and of course you can call 211. You can get your hands on a cell phone or one of the very, very few remaining payphones, I guess. You can call 211 and find out information like this, and I will be summarizing. There's a number of shelters, so if you're ready for this, I'm just going to rattle off the name and the address of the shelter. There are other details that you can find out, as I say, by calling 211. But I do encourage you to get out of this wind. Mox Nix with the snow, it's the wind that's going to get you. TPI Imago Day Shelter, 1302 Southeast Ankeny Street. TPI Bud Clark Commons Emergency Shelter, 650 Northwest Irving Street. Union Gospel Mission, 3 Northwest 3rd Avenue. All of these are in Portland. 330 Southeast 11th Portland, St. Francis Dining Hall. In Gresham, 346 Northwest 1st Avenue. That's Anawim Christian Community. 4775 North Lombard in Portland. That's St. John's Warming Shelter. Human Solutions Family Center, 16015 Southeast Stark Street in Portland, 160th and Stark. Now, all of these are making special arrangements because of the weather today. So whereas you might have had to, like one of them, you would normally pay $5 to get in or something, they will let you in today for free. Here's some more. Portland Rescue Mission, 111 West Burnside, Portland. Salvation Army Female Emergency Shelter, 30 Southwest 2nd, female identified adults. City Team International, 526 Southeast Grand Avenue, they're waiving their $5 fee, it's walk-in. Gresham Women's Shelter, 161st East Burnside, between Portland and Gresham. Porchlight Youth Shelter, 1635 Southwest Alder in Portland. Harry's Mother Runaway Shelter, 738 Northeast Davis Street in Portland. 9401 Northeast Sunderland Avenue, that's the Dignity Village Warming Shelter. St. Francis Dining Hall, 330 Southeast 11th, right close to KBOO here. Unrestricted. The Day Center at Bud Clark Commons is open, 650 Northwest Irving Street. Pear at 338 Northwest 6th Avenue in Portland. Native American Youth and Family Center at 5135 Northeast Columbia Boulevard. City Team International, 526 Southeast Grand. St. Andre Besset Catholic Church, 601 West Burnside Street in Portland. Rose Haven, 627 Northwest 18th Avenue in Portland. Portland Rescue Mission, 111 West Burnside Street in Portland. Catholic Charities, 2740 Southeast Powell in Portland. Salvation Army Female Emergency Shelter, 30 Southwest 2nd in Portland. New Avenues for Youth, 314 Southwest 9th Avenue in Portland. And Outside Inn in Portland at 1132 Southwest 13th Avenue. Now, if you didn't catch the details on that, don't worry. Just get yourself to a phone and dial 211. Dial 211 and get out of that wind, especially if you're older like me. And it'll get you if you're not careful. So you're listening to Press Watch. And a very cold and windy KBOO Portland. We're expecting a little snow a little later. So to the headlines. Environmental lawyer turned Portland City Commissioner Steve Novick has a cool use for the new SEC rules requiring companies to disclose executive pay starting in 2017. He's going to impose special taxes on businesses where the ratio of CEO pay to median worker pay exceeds 100 to 1, an increase of 10% for 101 companies and 25% for 250 to 1 companies. That's from Cory Doctorow's article in Boing Boing. And it's a great article. I think I would have started off talking about one of the other city council members. Hales is very excited about this. But the update is that measure passed. And so Portland, and this is international news, and funny, it doesn't seem to be well covered in Portland. Portland will now tax corporations that pay their CEO 100 to 1 over their median worker. That's not the lowest worker pay. That's the median worker pay, 100 times as much. Now, you might want to ask, now, how much does that happen? Well, it happens a lot. I have some details in just a moment. Going back to Cory Doctorow's article, quoting Novick, said he was inspired in part by Thomas Piketty's Magisterial Capital in the 21st Century, which traced the rise of income inequality using a painstakingly assembled data set spanning 300 years. Said he was 95% confident that he had the 3 votes needed, and as I said, it did pass. And then they comment from Branko Milanovic, former lead economist of the World Bank. The idea was novel, he said, because it treats inequality as having a negative externality, like taxing carbon emissions. Gee, you think it might have a negative externality? Yeah, inequality really screws people around. It messes with your head, and it deprives you of the basic needs of life. For example, there's an old article on Alternet. I say old, it's from last year. A quote, a part of it said, in 1970, for every dollar earned by the average worker, the top 100 CEOs earned on average $45. So 45 times as much. By 2013, the ratio had jumped to 829 for each dollar, which is 20 times greater than what the typical American in a survey that they issued had guessed. More amazing still is that on the average, Americans think CEOs of large companies receive about $900,000 per year in compensation, when in reality they receive nearly $30 million every year. It's as if our perception of the income gap was frozen in 1970. We had just not caught up with the realities of runaway inequality. And departing from that article makes me want to comment. I think that indeed is what most people think. They think that CEOs get around a couple million. No. The large companies get $30 million, and that money comes out of the worker. And that's another thing that Americans find hard to understand. They think, oh, the worker only earned blah, blah. That's not what happens. A bunch of people get together, you call it a corporation, everyone does work. A certain amount of money is gathered into that corporation. A certain amount of it goes into keeping the corporation going and expanding it, perhaps, then there's money left over. What is done with that money? It is very grossly maldistributed. So the people doing the most work, the people who are the most skilled, who give the most of their lives, get the least by far, by 829 to 1. And we have these great emperors and kings and tyrants that we call CEOs. And we think, oh, well, you know, maybe someday I'll be a CEO. Well, you won't. You're not going to be CEO of a major corporation. Ain't going to happen. And if you do, well, you're on the other side, because that is immoral, frankly. That is immoral. I have no problem saying that. To take $30 million when you're earning 829 times as much as the average worker. And it destroys what's left of democracy. So you're listening to Press Watch. Today, the United States Court of Appeal for Ninth Circuit confirmed that Circuit Judges Susan Graber and Andrew Hurwitz, as well as District Court Judge Richard Boulware, sitting by designation, will hear oral arguments on the legality of the Iraq War. Anybody remember the Iraq War still going on? Why did we start doing that? Well, it was about those weapons of mass destruction, and the weapons of mass destruction turned out to be fake news. And who distributed the fake news about the weapons of mass destruction? Well, certainly every major news agency here in Portland did. I remember the Oregonian was especially enthusiastic about it for a while. And to be fair, many news organizations like the New York Times, after promoting the weapons of mass destruction, they did come from heavies. I mean, we got Colin Powell coming out saying they were for real, and he could back it up. And But they didn't do their work. They were not journalists. They were just stenographers for power. And we were all talking about weapons of mass destruction. And, oh my God, we're going to be struck by chemical weapons from Saddam Hussein, and went to war on a lie. In other words, engaged in aggression. Because the lie came from the government. The lie came from the people who were in power. And it doesn't matter that we are fooled. We went along with it. And Saleh versus Bush in the Ninth Circuit involves claims by an Iraqi woman, Sundas Shakir Saleh, that former President George W. Bush and other high-ranking Bush-era officials broke the law when they planned and waged the Iraq War. Now, we're not used to thinking of them being even answerable to the law, but there is such a thing as international law. There is such a thing as morality. And they have broken the law, and Saleh alleges that former Bush administration leaders committed the crime of aggression when they planned and executed the Iraq War, a war crime that called the supreme international crime at the Nuremberg trials in 1946. Certainly millions are dead because of that. Saleh is appealing the immunity provided to the defendants by the district court in December 2014. Quoting Saleh's attorney, Inder Komar, legal director at Komar LLP, "We are pleased that the Ninth Circuit will hear argument. To my knowledge, this is the first time a court will entertain arguments that the Iraq War was illegal under domestic and international law." So that's coming up on the 12th, and you'll be able to see that on court television. It's not the first thing on the docket. It's a few items down. Time is 9:15. You're listening to Press Watching Cascadia on KBOO Portland. The Guardian reports broken polling machines may have put vote counts in question on more than half of Detroit's precincts and nearly one-third of surrounding Wayne County, possibly throwing the Michigan recount into chaos. If the discrepancies can't be solved by recounting every paper ballot in question by hand, a recount in those precincts simply won't happen. Donald Trump's slim margin over Hillary Clinton means any chance of the state flipping on a recount likely hinges on Wayne County, where the Democrat won by a landslide. Clinton lost by 10,704 votes in Michigan. Wayne's population of 1,759,000 makes it the likeliest candidate to contain errors bigger than that margin. Now, departing from the text, it's even worse. because the courts have shut that down, which doesn't mean that the recount is over, which you will hear over and over in the press if you hear anything at all about the recount. It's not even over in Michigan, because there can be an appeal. There will be an appeal. More on that in just a moment. So as you can tell, now I've gone on to the one of the two major topics I wanted to touch on today. First, the update on the recount, and then I want to get to the general strike to stop Trump and to stop fascism. Returning to the article from the Guardian, there are three vote totals: the total number of votes, the electronic ballot scanners report, the total number of people who signed the electoral roll or the poll book, and the total number of paper ballots filled out and stored in sealed containers. The poll books and the electronic ballot scanners do not match. So the paper ballots will be counted by hand. If hand-tallied ballots can't resolve all the mismatches, the votes will stand in the counties where the errors remain. And if that confuses you, well, yeah, that's kind of confusing, isn't it? There's an error, so you can't recount. Huh? What? There's an error, so you can't recount. Huh? What? There's an error, so you can't recount. 87 of Wayne County's decade-old voting machines broke on election day, 87 of them, according to Detroit's elections director Daniel Baxter. He told the Detroit News, which first reported the story, that ballot scanners often jammed when polling place workers were trying to operate them. Every time a jammed ballot was removed and reinserted, he suspects the machine may have recounted it. So this is an article from The Guardian. I have a few more articles, and basically what I'll be using these for is to make the point and to drive home the fact: the election was stolen and is still being stolen. And it's Trump's money, his ability to jump into any court he wants and with any amount of lawyers that he wants, that is stealing the election. This is not a legitimate president. We must have a general strike, and we shall. More on that in a moment. Preliminary investigation. Returning to the Guardian article, preliminary investigation by election officials in Wayne County found that 610 of the area's 1,680 precincts could not reconcile the number of votes cast according to the machines with the number of ballots issued according to the electoral rolls. Detroit contains 662 of Wayne's precincts, and 392 of those, the number of votes didn't match up. Baxter told the news he was confident a recount would match the ballots issued to the paper records, which are sealed and stored under guard. I don't think it's going to be 100%, he said, but it never is with a recount. State law rejects a recount in places where the two figures don't match up. A precinct is ineligible to be recounted if the number of ballots to be recounted, the number of ballots issued on election day as shown on the poll list or the computer printout do not match, and the difference is not explained to the satisfaction of the Board of Canvassers, the law says in Michigan. Now, departing from that, you would think that if anything went to the courts, it would be Jill Stein's campaign going to the courts and saying, well, this is obviously unconstitutional. If we are to have an election and it's going to have that guarantee of recounts, then obviously you can't just make up a rule and say that things can't be recounted. And I think that that would go through. But at this point, Michigan is shut down pending appeal. More on that. Returning to the Guardian article for more details. The recount was triggered by Green Party candidate Jill Stein in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. On Monday, Stein asked a federal court to intervene in Pennsylvania after state courts demanded $1 million bond before it would proceed. Computer scientists have been sounding the alarm about shoddily made, insecure, and incompatible voting machines for several years. The only way to find out whether technical problems or even malicious hacking have contributed large errors to the electoral tally is to audit the vote. Now that a recount is underway, Michigan officials are indeed finding major technical problems. That's British press. That's The Guardian saying this. Jeremy J. Epstein, a researcher with SRI, successfully campaigned in 2015 to have Virginia's WinVote machines decertified when he discovered that the factory set network passwords for WinVote voting machines were often ABCDE or admin. Now, as I was saying, the latest news is that the court struggle goes on. The Trump organization has gone to court after court, has been slapped down several times, four times, I think, and has finally managed to shut down Michigan. Again, I say temporarily. All I can say is keep listening. It's complicated. But the basis of this is that, yes, the recount is finding that Trump stole the election. And yes, the recount is being shut down by Trump. Some more details from gregpalace.com. To begin with, the main work of the recount has a damn thing to do with finding out if the software programs for the voting machines have been hacked, whether by Putin's agents or some guy in a cave flipping your vote from Hillary to the Donald. The Green Team, he means the Stein recount, does not even yet have the right to get into the codes. But that's just not the core of the work. The nasty little secret of U.S. elections, Palace writes, is that we don't count all the votes. In Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, and all over America, there were a massive number of votes that were simply rejected, invalidated, and spoiled. They were simply not counted. Officially, in a typical presidential election, at least 3 million votes end up rejected, often for picayune, absurd reasons. The rejects fall into three big categories. Provisional ballots rejected. Absentee and mail-in ballots invalidated. And in-precinct votes spoiled, meaning spit out by a machine or thrown out by a human reader as unreadable or mismarked. So, as Robert Fitrakis, lead lawyer for the recount, tells Palast, their first job is to pull the votes out of the electoral dumpster and one by one make the case for recounting a rejected provisional absentee or spoiled ballot. How does the vote spoil? Most fall in the categories of overvotes and undervotes. In Michigan, the Green Team has found that a whole lot of people who voted for two candidates for president, these are overvotes, votes that will count for neither candidate. How odd, he writes, while the schools in Detroit are not stellar, its graduates do know that they can only have one president. Then some folks didn't vote at all. They're called the undervoter. But Fitrakis, meaning they didn't vote at all on the ballot for president. But Fitrakis and the team suspect many of these under and overvoters meant to vote for a candidate, but the robot reader couldn't understand their choice. Here's how it happens, he writes. Voters in Michigan and Wisconsin fill in bubbles next to their choice. The cards filled up with darkened bubbles for each race are gathered and fed through an optical scanner. These robotic eyeballs mess up all the time. Now, departing from this text, we have optical scanners here in Oregon, and I would say by and large our elections are cleaner here in Oregon. But if you want to screw up an election, if you want to make sure that, let's say, well, let's just go with what is historically known. If you want to make sure that black people aren't able to vote, then you get the ballots from black people's districts. You do a lot more than that. I mean, you cage them from voting by coming up with the illegal, the criminal interstate cross-check list, and you kick them out of the voter roll first. Then you run the ballots through the machine too fast or with not enough vacuum. Vacuum is necessary for a machine like that to handle paper, to handle one piece of paper at a time. You need to control vacuum speed, electrostatic indices, and you can mess with that to the point that a certain bubble on a certain place on the ballot will not get read, and that's spoiled the ballot. Oh gosh, look, they voted for two people. They didn't vote for anyone. We'll throw these ballots away. That's what they do. Now, returning to Palace article, are machines calibrated with Republican and Democrat bias? No, that's not how it works, but just as poor areas get the worst schools and hospitals, they also get the worst voting machines. Actually, having read that from Palace, I think he's being very generous. I am not so generous. I know exactly how they do this. But anyway, returning to the article, the key is an ugly statistic not taught in third grade civics class. According to the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, the chance your vote will be disqualified as spoiled is 900% more likely, nine times more likely if you're black than if you're white. So the Green Party intends to review every single one of the 6 million bubble-filled cards. They'll use the one instrument that can easily tell one bubble from two or one bubble from none, the human eye. As you can imagine, this will require several thousand eyes. The good news, Fitchakis reports, is that well over 1,000 volunteers already signed up. And information is a few days behind. The recount has been going on. According to the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, Americans cast 2.7 million provisional ballots in the last presidential election. About a million were simply discarded. You show up at your normal polling station, they can't find your name, or they don't like your ID, or you're supposed to vote in another precinct. Instead of letting you vote on a regular ballot, you fill out a provisional ballot and place it in an envelope, sign your name under penalty of jail time for lying, affirm that you're the properly registered voter. Polls close, and then the magic begins. It's up to highly partisan election officials, read Republican, to decide if your vote counts. Hillary Clinton only won one swing state, Virginia, notably the one where the vote count was controlled by Democrats. She lost all swing states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Arizona, North Carolina, and Florida, where the GOP set the rules for counting these ballots. And their hacks acted as the judge and jury on whether a ballot should be counted. And once again, departing from the text, that's how it's done. Wisconsin, he writes, generally rejects votes cast in the wrong precinct, even if they're legal voters. And Fitchakis says, even if their official precinct was just another table in the same high school gym, they were misdirected by poll workers. He writes, that's why I sometimes call provisional ballots placebo ballots. They let you feel you're voted, even if you haven't. So to summarize, and I do have some more details that I'll be reading out here, a lot more details. The recount is going on. Gross irregularities have been found. It's very clear that Trump stole the election. The recount is being shut down by Republican judges and by Republican cash power to hire lawyers to go out and call for the recount to be shut down. The Michigan shutdown is on the basis of the idea that Jill Stein cannot be aggrieved. You have to be aggrieved and you have to be a candidate to get a recount. And so apparently it's not enough that Jill Stein is an American citizen who's aggrieved that democracy is not being honored, that the election has been stolen. I find that very aggrieving. And I imagine she does too, but the pretense in court right now, which may get overthrown by an appellate court, As Stein moves forward, according to her, you know, she's close to running out of funds, but she has collected more than $7 million. It does depend on how much she's able to raise from the American people, but, you know, she'll go to court too, and she'll try to appeal these things. But that's the basis right now. Trump stole the election. He got caught, is getting caught. Those ballots in Michigan, in Detroit, all the black districts in Detroit have been thrown out using dirty tricks. They're not being counted, and the recount was shut down just before court action could get those ballot boxes to be opened. So it's very corrupt, it's creepy. And fascism has taken power in the United States. And it's fascism it's Stopping Fascism that I want to talk about in the second half of the program. I'm going to be taking your calls about the two topics, talk about the general strike. Before I get to the general strike, I want to say generally, it's going to take a lot of effort. It's going to be rather disruptive to do a general strike. But, you know, my ancestors fought and died killing Hitler's minions because it had to be done. Killing Tojo's minions because it had to be done. This is much easier than going to war. What if we had been able to stop Hitler with a general strike? Wouldn't that have been nice? Wonder what the world would look like with those millions and millions of people. I think it's like 16 million Russians died stopping Hitler. So many more than, you know, just don't know where to start with that. But we have the opportunity to do the right thing. So the number to call with your comments and questions is 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Trump has stolen the election. He is continuing to steal it by shutting down the recount. The recount has discovered that it has been stolen. The recount is blocked right now, but is not completely stopped. And so that's the latest. And so I'll give you a few more details about that, and then I want to talk about general strike. Palast writes, if you've gone postal in this election, meaning if you've sent in your absentee ballot, good luck. According to EAC data, at least 500,000 absentee ballots go absent. That is, just don't get counted. The cause, everything from postage due to suspect signature. Sound familiar? FedTrack has told Palast, and this is from GregPalast.com, that in his home state of Ohio, you need to put your driver's license number on the envelope. And if you don't have a driver's license and leave the line blank, instead of writing no driver's license, they toss your ballot. It's a gotcha system, he writes, meant to knock out the ballots the officials don't want to count. Remember, your mail-in ballot is anything but secret. Team Green will try to fight for each absentee ballot rejected for cockamamie reasons. If the recount doesn't change the outcome, he writes, can we feel assured the election was honest? He writes, sadly, no. As Fitrakis says, if a student was given a provisional ballot because they didn't have the right ID, or the state simply lost their registration, we can fight for the ballot to be counted. But most students who voted off campus didn't know their right to get a provisional ballot, and most probably didn't get offered one. Students and others were discouraged from voting because they lacked the proper ID. That's 300,000 of them by the estimates of the experts with the ACLU. That's 30 times Trump's plurality. But if you didn't cast any ballot, provisional or otherwise, no one can fight for it. And final decisions may come down to the vote of the Wisconsin's Elections Commission. God forbid, he writes, as Norman Stockwell, the editor of Madison Base, The Progressive, explained to Palast, formerly elections law adjudications were made by a panel of nonpartisan judges. These were replaced by a new commission of partisan shills appointed by a GOP governor, Scott Walker. Trump, he says millions voted illegally. Is he crazy? Crazy like a fox. There's a method in his madness that affects the recount. While the media dismisses Trump's claim that there are millions of people who have voted illegally, they may not have paid attention to the details of his claim. Trump explains that millions of people are voting many, many times. That is, voting two states in the same election. Trump's claim is based on a list of potential duplicate voters created by his operative, Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach. Kobach, a top dog in Trump's transition team, directs a program for hunting down fraudulent voters. You can put fraudulent in scare quotes, using a computer system called CrossCheck. It's quite a computer. CrossCheck identified a breathtaking 449,000 Michiganders who are suspected of voting or registering a second state, a felony crime, as are 371,000 in Pennsylvania. He writes, I spent 2 years investigating the Trump-Kobach claim for Rolling Stone. We obtained the confidential suspect list of several million citizens accused of voting twice. In fact, it was no more than a list of common names, Hernandez, Brown, Lee, that is common to voters of colors, read Democrats. A true and typical example, Michael James Brown of Michigan was supposed to be the same voter as Michael Kendrick Brown of Georgia. So in other words, departing from the text here, this was used to destroy the franchise of black people. About 54,000 voters in Michigan, Palast writes, five times Trump's plurality, lost their right to vote based on this nutty double voter accusation. In Pennsylvania, about 45,000 were purged. The problem for Fitrakis, while he eventually plans to file suit against cross-check purges, in the meantime, it's not clear he can challenge someone who lost their vote because of a false accusation of double voting. And those who found their names missing and didn't demand a provisional ballot, there's no hope at all of recovering their vote. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Alex is on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, I'm listening to your show, definitely appreciating it. I just wanted to say, you know, you're stating that Trump stole the election. That's as may be. But I think we should also pay some attention to the context of the primary and what happened there. Both Bob Fotrakis and Greg Palast also investigated many irregularities in the Democratic primary, where through hard and soft voter suppression, they believe that the election was also or could have also been stolen from Bernie.
You're absolutely right.
Popular candidate that could have probably wiped the floor with Trump if the polls were any
As best anyone could tell. Yeah, as best anyone could tell. Taking the polls, doing the numbers, yeah, he would have wiped the floor with Trump. He would have wiped out Trump. But the Democratic corporate conformist regime couldn't bear the thought of a socialist in office. And you know, I've said many times, the corporate press in collaboration with the Democrats absolutely iced him out, literally giving more time to Trump's empty podium than they ever gave to Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. So that was my comment.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's ironic and true that, you know, it's karma for the Democrats. You know, how do you like that election stealing stuff when it's on the other side? Yeah, thanks very much for calling in.
Yep.
Number to call 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And by the way, I'm interested in slapping down Trump. Doesn't mean I wouldn't go after Clinton if she were put in office instead, which I don't think is going to happen because I can see just how corrupt the machine is. And the real gain that I see coming out of the recount is that we can establish logically and specifically that Trump stole the election. So we'll be able to use that against him as we move forward with action after action after action, starting with this general strike. Number to call 503-231-8187. Vern's on the air.
Yeah, is this Teresa Mitchell?
This is.
Yeah, it's a great show. I'm so glad you... I really agree with a lot of your views right there. You know, it's a sad thing that we lost KPOJ, you know. I mean, I was listening when KPOJ changed formats, you know. You know, it was they were playing a classic, I guess, rock or something, and then they changed over. I think the first guy that came on was Al Franken right there.
Yeah, that was kind of fun while it lasted, huh?
I had KPOJ on. And I'm glad that you're on there, and your views are, you know, Air America was a great thing right there. And
it had its results. I think that I think a big reason that Bernie was able to make as much progress as he did was because of Air America, because he was familiar to millions of Americans through Air America.
Well, I don't know, you know, Trump's just stole the election or whatever, but I know Hillary was caught rigging the election. That's a definite thing there, isn't it?
Yes, there's no doubt that there was vote rigging on Hillary's point and on Hillary's side, and
Hillary
I can make
and that awful thing, D.W. Wasserman Schultz, right there.
Yes, but I have absolutely no doubt that Trump stole the election. It's just in the numbers.
Well, he might have paid. Those machines can. They don't. I don't know why the rest of the country doesn't adopt. Our great Oregon system of voter by mail, it seems to work really well here. And I don't know why the rest of the country doesn't fall in line. Maybe they get more benefits.
Well, one reason people don't go for a change is because you have this constant crap in the press. Like if you read anything about the recount, the first thing you're most likely to read is that there is no evidence that the voting machines are in any way fallible, that they could be hacked. Now, this is simply not true.
This is what they're telling.
You know, I've been, you know, Greg Palast and many people for years and years now have pointed out just how hackable and how many times these things have been hacked. And they are absolutely, the basis of their defense is the idea, how dare you question the American way of doing things, the corporate way of doing things. And there's no logical basis for questioning it. There's just a matter of loyalty. And the other thing that you'll read is that there is no chance that a recount would change the election. And that also is absolutely false by the numbers. I mean, if you can add, you can see that that is false. And that is why the Trump organization has been going to court after court after court, trying every single trick that they can possibly come up with to stop this recount, mm-hmm. which, if their claims were true, could not possibly hurt them. Hey, thanks a lot for your call. The number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And I want to start talking about the general strike, too. I want your ideas, how to start moving forward, what organizations to contact, what sort of coalitions can be done, fundraising for, postering for, administrative costs for temporary office, that sort of thing. Let's start thinking about this general strike. It is going to happen. I can say that because people from across the country, people as diverse as Robert Reich and Shama Sawant, are calling for a general strike, and they are going to be organizing. And you better believe Shama Sawant knows how to organize. So this is going to happen, and how strong is it going to be on our end? I would like to know. And Sean's on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Paper ballots, paper ballots, paper ballots.
Oh, hell yeah.
So on that point, that's all I have to say. But the other one is, I also want to say that because the two-party system is mentioned earlier, and you know, the election being thrown, you know, and getting Bernie out of the deal thanks to the DNC, that, you know, even the DNC, I think, had something to do with. I mean, ultimately, you have to look at it this way: that they had so much to do with getting Trump into office, so to speak. But the main thing is that, you know, it's easy to say that Trump is doing all this, and he's not actually officially sitting as president yet. So I just want to point out that as easy it is to say that he's doing this, it's more to the point that, you know, a lot of the people on the far right and neoliberals and so forth, who everything from the Koch brothers to people in the military and on, who are saying, you know, that Trump was a terrible person, we cannot elect somebody like that, and so forth. I just want to point out that the government, people in government, there's official statements and there's unofficial statements. And I believe that a lot of these people, they could not publicly look like they were supporting Bush and Trump, good Freudian slip, but that they couldn't publicly present themselves that way. But the fact is, I firmly believe they were supporting him because, for the most part, Trump supports the very things that they want and their agendas that they're pushing. So my personal opinion is that they are the ones who are pushing this agenda on behalf of Trump, and he will follow through if he does end up being selected in January. but for the most part, he can't really have a sway on this. I mean, you got to remember, even Scott Walker was not in support of Trump officially, but unofficially he was. And now you see what he's doing, like in Wisconsin right now.
It's a really interesting phenomenon.
Yeah, it's really ugly. And I think if people look at the broader picture of who is Donald Trump the face of, ultimately. I mean, he's the face of the system that is pushing this and even pushing it harder now that there's more pushback from the left trying to make changes in society, trying to affect a different society, so to speak. And they seem to be wanting to hunker down even more. So anyway, I just want to make that point. I think it's easy to start already saying that Trump specifically, individually, is having to do with this. But I think it's more you have to look at even the people who are advising him to pick the people that he's choosing to be on his cabinet.
Well, sure. But for shorthand, it's the Trump Organization doing that. Hey, thanks a lot for your call. 503-231-8187 is the number to call to participate in the discussion. We'll talk about general strike, because I think once the recount goes through, and once the recount is, however it comes out, I imagine it's going to be jammed to a stop. It's not stopped yet. Don't believe that. I'll have some more details on that in just a moment. But, you know, you can see all the colossus of power moving against finishing this recount. The general strike is what we need to do next, I do believe. And I think that that's going to be a powerful thing, and that's going to change January 20th from a day of horror into a day of solidarity. And I think we can actually have some fun doing this. When you think of the potlucks and the dancing and the getting together and the fun things that we can do, even the postering, previous to the event. It's going to be a blast. I think we're really going to enjoy it, and we need to start organizing it. If you are in an organization that you think might be sympathetic, please start thinking about, please talk to them, talk to your fellow activists about the general strike, about whether you want to participate, and if so, how. I went to a business. I went to a bagel business the other day, and I started talking about the general strike, and I was just, you know, I'm kind of working it out in my head. And the response was very enthusiastic. This little bagel business was saying, yeah, yeah, we want to shut down for the general strike. So, yeah, it can happen. Absolutely, it can happen. Let's see, rather than go to more details on the recount right now, we'll go to John. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Hi, John.
Good morning. I listen every week. Did you happen to hear Amy Goodman this morning?
I did not.
As soon as I turned it on, about 7:15, she was interviewing a man from Texas who's an electoral college voter, and he's calling for the purpose of electoral college to keep a demagogue out of office. He wrote an editorial, and she had interviewed him. He's super eloquent, and it was like the most exciting interview I heard in a long time.
Yes, the so-called faithless elector, and James Madison and the Federal Papers make it pretty clear that that was an idea that was part of the formation of the Electoral College. And I would say, generally, the formation of Electoral College was on the basis of classist hegemony, and Madison was pretty bad about that. But, you know, so I want to keep it in that context. Madison was a slave owner and proud of it. But
it's something about the Hamilton movement. I guess Hamilton spoke about it, too.
Yeah. And the idea being that if you get a demagogue, and they did use the word demagogue, I believe, then it is your moral duty as an elector not to let that person into office and cause all the mayhem that they will cause.
Yeah, check this interview out. It's really exciting. And the other thing I wanted to bring up, a question. I wonder why Bernie never responded to Jill Stein when she reached out to him. Even though that he lost the primary, her and him together, who knows what would have happened?
Well, I can't speak for Bernie, of course, but if I understand who he is and what he planned out, he was very clear that he had a plan for influencing the Democratic Party. He wanted to win the nomination, but affirmed early on that he would support the nominee no matter what, and that he would take. What he's doing now is he is taking the basically the voter list that he got, which is so valuable, and he is organizing on that basis, and he calls it something-something revolution, which I don't think it quite is, but he can call it revolution if he wants. And so his whole scheme was to, you know, to take that attitude, to take these actions that he took the actions that he said that he would take, and he is now using the power that he has gathered to move forward with his agenda, and he wants to transform the Democratic Party, and I say good on him and good luck. That's not my agenda personally. I think the Democratic Party is, I mean, this has been done over and over again. I think the Democratic Party is too corrupt to budge, but maybe I'm wrong and maybe Bernie can change it.
I was just listening to NPR right before I tuned into your show, and Donald Trump is friends with this Kansas guy who's behind this voter suppression, erasing millions of names off of the voter rolls for mostly minority people.
Yeah, the interstate cross-check system is the most
Donald
powerfully
Trump
racist apartheid system.
To come up with his statements that millions of people are voting twice, and that you know, so this guy who's erasing votes is Donald Trump's support for his claim that millions of people are voting illegally.
Yeah, and this criminal is in his cabinet.
Oh my goodness. Can we need the Electoral College to step up? I guess it's in 21 states they're free to vote their conscience. In 29 states they're not.
Yeah, we should do that. I think we should take all actions. We should try to take the electoral vote down. We should, you know, try to push forward the recount. We should do the general strike. We're going to have to push and push and push. And like I said, this is nothing compared to the sacrifices that were made against fascism in the Second World War. If our ancestors can do it, we can do it.
Amen.
Okay, thanks for calling in. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Sue is on the air.
Hi, Teresa. I just wanted to warn people that don't get complacent about Oregon's voting system. We now have a Republican senator, a Secretary of State, who could bring in the cross-check program. Presumably, I mean, I don't actually know how much power he has, but the main reason we've had such clean elections here is because the Dems in general don't want to take votes away from people, and so they've basically tried to protect those. That's not to say that our system can't be hacked in the form of the counting machines we have in the county offices. And in other ways, like you said, you know, with a Republican Secretary of State, he can disfranchise Democratic votes if he...
And it's most likely that he will.
We have to be vigilant. And then I just wanted to do a shout out for the other reason that you're doing the thing, the January 20th thing. But I'd like to ask you, besides making us feel good, what do you see might be accomplished through the general strike?
Well, I wouldn't quite phrase it that way, but making us feel good is super important right now, because the way this fascist colossus works is to take a minority of citizen, and we are now in apartheid rule, you understand that? White minority rule that's happening right now, by the numbers. You've got to get beaten down, and as people who study fascism have pointed out, and as Positively Revolting pointed out last week, people give away power to fascists. Because they give up, they feel intimidated. Intimidation is so important to fascism. Because by the numbers, I mean, think about it. At the end of, I'll use fascism more broadly and say totalitarianism. At the end of Honecker's rule in East Germany, when that state existed, there was such a demonstration, you know, there was that moment when the wall started to come down and everyone who had been so suppressed for so long, and even people who had collaborated, decided no more of this. And then the actual people, the people who were actually dedicated to the system, who actually believed in it, were so small by comparison. They were run out. People were throwing down their machine guns and running out of the Stasi building. They were terrified, because when that intimidation is broken, the totalitarianism is broken. So when it comes to mood, I would say that is super important for a general strike. And that's what I want most out of it. It's just all of us getting together and feeling our power and thinking forward that we need to double down, and we've got to save this planet from global warming that is out of control. I mean, there's one thing that I haven't gotten to talking about is that there's a new factor of global warming that's just been discovered in the last several weeks, and that is the soil respiration is pumping more CO2 in than anyone ever calculated. All of the disaster predictions that were decades in the future now have to be moved. We don't know how far forward. Everything's being recalculated. We are in a global warming disaster now, and we have to do something. Some very extreme things have to be done right now. And these fascists simply have to be swept away. And we need to look at that. We have to double down. This is our survival we're talking about. I mean, literally. The incarceration state, the racism, the violence that is coming down against people of color, GLBTQ, this is unacceptable. Doing a general strike will allow people to understand that we have the power to confront that, that we have the power to turn that around, even though this disaster has occurred, even though there are so many. And it's funny. Well, I'm sorry that you rang off. I guess I rattled on too much, but it's funny, you know, the polls, the people who were the backbone of the vote for Trump were people who have a college degree. And it just reflects to me just what a joke the American college degree is. I mean, people graduate from college in this nation and you wouldn't have a chance of getting into Finland or Austria or Swedish or German colleges with an American BA. It's a joke. I mean, you get out of college, you've got your diploma, you don't understand history, you don't have a patch on logic, your statistics are so weak as to be laughable, you don't speak other languages, you're just uneducated. But you have this degree, which allows you to go into business, which is basically why it's a degree. It's just a glorified, I won't even say high school, because people come out of Finland high schools with a better understanding of the world than Americans do coming out of college. And these people wanting theirs and not giving a damn, and they are racist. Trump voters are racist, because you voted for someone who's very clearly the darling of racists, someone who made blatantly racist statements, someone who makes blatantly sexist statements, someone who's just unapologetically who he is. And that didn't matter because you wanted yours. And what you... If you say that black people don't matter, if you don't care that black people get squeezed out of everything everywhere, they're shot down the streets, cannot be safe going out on their own damn sidewalks, that's racist. So I will give no quarter on that. You voted for Trump, you're racist. It's so clear, it's provable. You're not going to get out of it. And I'm not going to say that I won't talk to Trump voters, but I'll talk to you knowing that you're racist. And you want to get along with me. If you want to be my friend, if you're a Trump voter, then renounce your Trump vote. Renounce that sort of casual racism, because it's in America, it's the casualness, it's the denial, it's the gaslighting that allows whiteness to go on, allows white people to crush black people, to crush Hispanic people, to crush Asian people. It's pretending that it's not happening is such an essential part. And so I am not sympathetic. I'm not racist, but oh yes, you are. Yes, you are. Number to call 503-231-8187. Scotty's on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I got a touch of bronchitis, so you bear with me.
All righty.
But I love what you're saying, except I want to change your narrative completely.
Well, that's interesting. It sounds a little contradictory. Let's see what you got to say.
Well, I really feel that we are at a place, at such an amazing place in history, where we have an opportunity to evolve into Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek society. That it's so simple right now that we can all stand together and come together and say no moleste, no more violence. It really seems easy to me.
And how would that be accomplished?
I hear you doing the divisions between black and white and Latino or rich and poor. The fact is, we have about 25% of global resources left. Once that's gone, the regime that is trying to crush humanity, basically, for the few, will be in power, because the scarcity myth will be true. Right now, the scarcity myth is a myth.
Well, I would say that the people who are in power right now are that tiny minority, and they are that totalitarian, so I think we're in the thick of it, and it's just about to get worse.
Well, I really feel that we can come together, and it only takes a leader. It only takes a cheerleader, one radical individual has changed history at every pivotal point in our history. It comes down to an individual. Would you agree with that?
That it comes down to an individual? No, I mean, I'd have to see where you're coming from on that. And I suspect that I'm not able to adequately answer that on the air on the moment. But my first impulse
American
is like,
history,
no, I don't think it's an individual that does it. I think
you needed a Georgie, you needed a Frank, you know, you needed a Grover Cleveland. You needed everyone you needed the people to change it.
I think people stand out because ideas spread, and I think that there's a certain amount of collaboration that goes on. Even the cases like John Brown, he did what he did, and good on him. But he wasn't the only abolitionist. I'm almost out of time, so I'm going to go to the next caller. I think we've got time for one more call. Number to call 503-231-8187, and Onyx is on the air.
Thank you.
Hi.
You're hearing me, okay.
Yeah.
You know, this day was really no surprise, and I'm very happy to be here and be alive with KBOO and, you know, our lives as we continue. Firmly, I believe we are all here right now because our great mother was crying while she still had some water to share, and the water's gone.
Meaning Mother Nature, the Earth?
I do. The core on which we walk every day, our core.
All right.
And, you know, there are so many of us. And the raging grannies and beyond. You know, we don't need violence. But we must not be, we must have training and understand the dynamic of the energy and flow. I helped shut down the WTO, and we just had our 17th wonderful celebration for the successful shutting down of the WTO on November 29th, 1999, in Seattle.
I was there.
Pardon?
Hey, wasn't that magnificent? Yes. I was there.
Yes.
Hey, thanks for your call. I have run out of time and got the music playing.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful. And we're all here now to, you know, carry on.
Right on. Thanks so much for your call. All right, you've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, your community radio station. Thank you to all those of you who called in to support the station. I do think that the station will grow now because people are understanding how important it is. Pick up KBOO.fm if you'd like to contribute right now. I do encourage it. And you're listening to 90.7 FM in the Portland area, other frequencies in Greater Cascadia, and you're listening to KBOO.fm on the World Wide Web, where we go out to all the ships at sea.
And good morning. KBOO Portland is your community radio station. Coming up in 10:15, at 10:15, I should say, it is the Bradcast with Brad Friedman. It's Recount 2016 coverage continuing with denial in Philly and unrecountable in Michigan. Also, Trump nominates a climate change denier to lead the Environmental Protection Agency. Then at 11, it's Between the Covers, today welcoming author Emma Donahue to discuss her critically acclaimed new book, The Wonder. And then at 11:30, it's Words and Pictures, bringing you the work of Portland-based artist Anders Nilsson and his sketchbook collection, Poetry is Useless. But up next, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary right after this.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held. To request notice of board meetings in writing, please email Monica at kboo.org.